The following is a production of Des Moines Sears Media. Hello again, everybody, and welcome into Conversations That Nobody Wants to Have. I'm David Sears with my awesome co-host, Brandon Triola. It's been a while, brother. How you doing?
It has been a while. I'm good, man. I'm good. We did the Christmas thing, and as I told you, we're in that weird part of Christmas break that's right after Christmas and right before New Year's Eve, and nobody knows really what the hell day it is. And it could be the 27th or it could be the 28th. It might be the 30th. No one knows because it's just this like time.
And I'm like, man, I wish I had a job where I could not know. We had to work Christmas Eve because when you're in physical therapy, people have surgery the day before on Festivus, have to get one appointment in before Christmas. So it's been pretty hectic. And then of course, when you work for Sports Talk Radio, this is the biggest time of the year with the college football playoff. So especially when you're in Birmingham.
Could you believe that Alabama game? Could you believe that Alabama Oklahoma?
I will say I did not give up hope when we were down 17-0, but I told my dad, we have to score a touchdown here or else we're not going to come back. And then
I have a confession.
You turned it off.
I have a confession, and I hope Father Saban doesn't hear this, but I turned it off for a little bit after 17-0.
Wow.
Because I was determined to enjoy this Christmas break and get so like maddened. I made wassail. This is how much I got into Christmas. I made wassail for our Christmas Eve Christmas party. I spent like 4 hours on it, like boiling it all. So anyway, get back to the game. So yeah, and I was like, I do not want to be depressed this holiday season. And so I was putting my daughter to bed and we were laying there and I was reading her story and I picked up the phone. You know, we had this rule, you know, I can't look at my phone during story time, which is totally fair. And I looked at it and, you know, to check the score, and it was that fourth down play. And I was like, oh my God, they scored. Oh. And that guy was like, no. And I put it back down. And my daughter was like, Dad, keep it down. I checked it again, and the interception happened. And I was like, no. And I told my daughter, I was like, all right, listen, I'll let you watch until halftime. Just don't tell your mom. So we just watched the game until halftime. And then after that, like, it was like the greatest Christmas.
Dude, so we were watching it, and Lila has been in basically a month-long migraine cluster. Yep. And so we're watching the game. She's trying to power through. We're watching it. We're being really quiet when we celebrate touchdowns over at my mother-in-law's. And it's really hard because her dog, Rose, will howl at touchdowns. Yeah. Like, full head back. She's a schnoodle. So she just throws her head back and howls as loud as she can. We're all celebrating. So we're trying to keep
it. Evolution just takes over her, huh?
It does. So we're trying to be quiet, trying to keep it. And then Lila's like, I can't do this. So we come over. And because we live next door to my mother-in-law, we sit down in the bed. I get everything dark, put the TV on mute. We block a fumble or we block a punt. That's kind of a drop slash block. And I'm like, okay, we need some points out of this. And I was like, oh God, comes to Talty. Talty kicks the field goal. I was like, okay, 17-10. And then I was like,
it was not a weekend for kickers, man.
Except for Alabama, Talty was 2 for 2.
Except for Alabama, yeah.
So, and then we're sitting there, and we're watching, and I was like, okay, we can't let him score before the half because we can't go down 2 scores again.
Yeah.
And then he throws the pick six, and Lila looks at me, and we go, holy shit, we just tied it. Talty gets the extra point.
This is a game now. And no one in college football is happy except Alabama fans.
And
no one.
So this is how superstitious I am. 50 Cent comes out in the start of the fourth quarter. So we turn it up. Oklahoma immediately scores a touchdown. So we put it on mute again. We watched the entire game on mute. Crew's like, nope, we can't do this. We can't risk this. So
did y'all at least like make the audios yourself?
No,
when people like hit, like, you're like, ugh,
well, like, I said some rats, stuff, but like for the most part, crashing. When Lila's having her migraines, I try to be quiet as possible.
Yeah.
Because, and then like we kiss after touchdowns. Like, we've done that since we were dating.
Yeah.
And so I'd give her a little peck, because she couldn't, like, when she has her migraines, her head feels like it's being shocked by lightning, just like little electricity all over her head. So she doesn't really want to touch anything except for these really squishy pillows we have. So we were just doing it, our routine, but we were keeping it low key. And I told my father and I told my mother-in-law at Christmas, I was like, if we start losing to Indiana on Thursday, Lila and I are leaving and coming back to our house, putting the game on mute and watching it in our bed again. So they've been aware. Yeah,
migraines sound horrible. Like, I can't imagine the pain when I hear people describe
Madden one,
it. Like, to me, like, a migraine would be like just having a conversation with Tommy Tuberville that, like, you just could not stop. Yeah, it would just be horrible.
But it's been going on for about a month. She got a treatment, and it says it takes 2 weeks for the treatment to go into effect. So it'll be 2 weeks tomorrow. So we're hoping she'll get some relief. Otherwise, we get to go to Cleveland and go to their migraine clinic, which is the best in the world.
Wow, that's crazy, man.
It's very fortunate that my best friend, Paul Linsky, cardiothoracic surgeon, is a bigwig and knows where all to go. And he's like, well, I'm friends with the head of the Cleveland migraine program, so I can get you in. We're like, okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we white privilege going to Vestavia. You tend to
whatever, man.
You get some hookups when you go to Vestavia.
So, use what you can, man. Use what you can.
So if this doesn't work, we'll be headed up to Cleveland, which I've never been to Ohio. So yeah,
I haven't either. Anything about it.
In all your world travels, you've never been to Ohio? I figure you would have done at least some type of road trip across the nation and stopped in Columbus
That's something that we wanted to do. I mean, at one point we're going to just rent a Winnebago and just drive across the country for, you know, 2 weeks out of the summer, 3 weeks out of the summer.
Make sure the shitter's not full.
Yeah, exactly. I've never been through Ohio. I mean, I know it causes problems every 4 years in elections, but that's about it.
Well, speaking of causing problems in elections, 2025 has been a dumpster fire of a year. It started when President Trump moved his inauguration inside to prevent the protesters from disrupting it. And behind him were the billionaires of the tech industry who have basically become an oligarchy for the United States.
Yeah, it was really a visual metaphor for where we are at this point in the country in terms of basically we're past that. We're at that 250 year ish mark where it's like something, there's going to be a giant pendulum swing, narrative shift, something's going to happen. And again, it's very hard to be objective about these things if you can be objective at all, because you're always just, you know, you're throwing in your perspective. We get a very limited time on this earth, and we're supposed to have, you know, develop some sort of objective-esque view of the world and the way that it's run. But it just really felt like no matter what happens with him, the billionaire tech guys, you know, we're basically 10 years away or less from AI being fully implemented in every facet of our lives. It just was like this very eerie George Orwell, you know, type moment. You know, it's like when you read 1984 for the first time and you like really go back and like, how were they so pinpoint accurate in so much of their predictions and prophecies?
I've been reading the classics of dystopia, read 1984, Brave New World, and one I had never read before. I had reread 84 and Brave New World, but I had never read It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis. And no, it is set during the Depression. He wrote basically what he saw about to happen in America during the Depression, where he references a lot of real world stuff. He talks about Hitler and the rise of Stalin and all this. And he talks about this candidate in America who comes in on a populist platform promising a $5,000 a year income for every American, which, you know, depression era, $5,000 a year. That's huge. But he needs some concessions. So he implements his own police force, the Minutemen, and they start to terrorize everyone, raiding houses in the middle of the night, arresting people for saying bad things about the president and the administration. And you read it and you look at, this isn't too dissimilar from what's going on with ICE right now and Trump's threats to remove FCC licenses for networks that talk bad about him. The media start to bend the knee so they don't get arrested or lose money. So the radio stations start writing or start talking favorably about him. All the newspapers get taken over by the state and put up glorious
CBS.
Yeah.
CBS just dropped that story about ICE.
Yeah. And then
because of, what is it? Their producer Wise. She was like, she has like she has a degree from like this uncredited school in Austin, you know, and it's like, how are you even producer of CBS News? And you're going to sit there and you're going to drop like a totally legit story like that. I mean, I just wonder how it's really going to hurt these companies and these people in the long run.
Well, it's shooting the credibility of everybody, legitimate media and illegitimate media. Now it's basically everyone going to get whatever version of the truth they want. And it's incredibly problematic because the main character starts an underground newspaper. He's a newspaper editor in Massachusetts, and he starts an underground newspaper working with the revolutionaries. And they're based out of Canada. The Americans.
So where is this like technically, like what time?
Is it 1935.
Okay, it's set in the night. Okay.
Yeah. And the president starts losing favor of the Americans. So he starts a war with Mexico, to reclaim the lands that should be American. That's like, we're starting a war with Venezuela so we can get their oil and their mineral deposits and stuff. So,
we're all of a sudden, Nigeria, going to Nigeria.
Yep.
We're going to say that like all the, which again, anyone being slaughtered, I don't care what your religious affiliation is terrible, whether it's Christians, Jews, Muslims, you know, whoever. So there's, you know, they say these Christians are being slaughtered in Nigeria and they were sending in to save them all. And of course it's like, oh, that's funny. This is happening right around Christmas Eve, right around when you guys are releasing the Epstein files and delaying the release of the ones that are really supposed to go out. And it all seems to be happening right about this time, Christmas Eve, Christmas, when you're hoping not too many people are paying attention. Mm-hmm.
It's freaky. And it shows you how great the literary minds were back in the day, that saw all this coming. Orwell and Huxley and Lewis and these people could see what was happening then. And now we're starting to do it again. We're starting to do all this stuff again with the predictions. And my favorite t-shirt was 1984 was not an advisory. So people are selling those shirts online on Redbubble and Etsy. I'm sorry, it was not an instruction manual. 1984 was not an instruction manual. So it's freaky. And then you look at the corruption of both major political parties. The Republicans are basically sycophants for the president. The Democrats, not all, there are some, are basically sycophants for their lobbyists and put forth the lobbyists' interests and their corporate donors' interests before the people. And it is just absolutely frustrating. And you don't want to look at it, and you hope you don't see it, but you can't continue on this course without some type of major revolution occurring or major suppression coming.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that. It's because as someone who's always been, like, ever since Obama came on the scene, I was already headed in that more liberal direction anyway. Obama was just, I mean, I know that was just a huge catalyst for me. And then even looking back at the Obama years and going, yeah, you know what? There's a lot of crap. I really, looking back, I didn't like the decisions he made. and coming out of that, like, you know, glorification of him, because it was exciting. You know, I got caught up in the historical nature of it, being the having the first African-American president. But just you seeing that and being someone that's more on the liberal side, I try very hard not to, you know, glorify the Democratic Party and the Democrats and their ideologies the way that I've seen people on both sides do. And then, of course, the idolatry that exists in the Trump cult. But I've always tried to find that objectivity the best I can while being completely self-aware. But yeah, I'm going to be on the more liberal side of things most of the time. And looking at that, it's so hard to, outside of Trump, before Trump, it was very much more simpler for me to say, okay, there's a different way of looking at things. I mean, yeah, there were some, you know, there was some rhetoric on both sides that I didn't like, but for the most part, I could talk to someone that was a conservative person, you know, and be like, yeah, we just disagree on that. But it's just like the Trump thing. And again, for me, call it whatever you want, you know, but I just, like, if you're okay with that level of a person being a politician, like, it just makes me go, ugh, what is different in you that I don't have? That I feel like I really have never done that with a politician.
Mm-hmm.
The way that, you know, these gung-ho Trump supporters, and now as far as I'm concerned, anyone left that is supporting him, after knowing and seeing everything that's coming out in the Epstein files and just knowing what we know about him this past decade. I don't know.
Well, I think we're starting to lose, he's starting to lose his base. And, when I went to Wisconsin for my birthday trip, my best friend, Paul, took me to Wisconsin or he lives in Wisconsin. He brought me up and we went to see the Packers play there. He lives in a purple neighborhood, but there's a clear divide between the purple neighborhood and the red neighborhood. And he showed me the red neighborhood pictures he had taken before the election. And then it all disappeared. All the Trump stuff started disappearing right around the time Trump was being linked to the Epstein. Like, this dude, yeah, that was the line for him, is Trump being a pedophile. He started pulling down all his Trump stuff and not being a big Trump supporter. Now you hear all the stuff about Pizzagate and the underground, celebrity sex parties with pedophilia.
Yeah.
And then it actually comes out that Trump's been a part of stuff like that, that really did happen.
The divine irony that QAnon was, who the QAnon people were searching for the whole time, was the person they were following. Where's the big sex trafficker? He's the big dude with the weird hair and the extra long tie that can't dance. That's the guy. That's the one. That's the guy you're looking for, QAnon. That's your Pizzagate right there. And it's just nuts. So again, like I said, it's so hard for me to sit there and go, I mean, I am more because now that I'm in New York and I feel like I'm even more progressive and liberal than a lot of some of the Democratic people that I know. Some of the people that I know that are Democrats.
Quit drinking that Mondani Kool-Aid.
I'm drinking that Mondani Kool-Aid. But again, I am very aware of some very progressive ideas that I have that I go, oh yeah, I'm very progressive in this, but I'm also very realistic. And I know that something like this will never happen. So we have to compromise. So, but I just don't see that right now I don't see that in the Republican Party until you said, yeah, I'm done with Trump. I'm done with that. It's just like, I've got nothing to hear from you. You know, I'm complete the opposite of this crap that Bill Maher does, because he has the luxury and privilege, you know, to be friends with these people because, you know, he's wealthy like that. You know, he has the luxury and privilege to reconsider some of his views because it is more profitable, and that's the way he feels the tide is going. So he changes his tone a little bit to get more people to watch him.
It's amazing to me how we don't have people who have convictions anymore. It is so much putting your finger in the air, seeing which way the wind's blowing right now, because both sides try to play whatever they think the public wants. And no one just stands, except for Bernie. Bernie's been the same man from 19. You could watch a Bernie speech in 1980 and a Bernie speech today, and it's essentially the same thing, except he changed his tone from there shouldn't be millionaires to now there shouldn't be billionaires.
So, right, but even that, isn't that just an avatar? You know, Bernie Sanders, the Bernie Sanders avatar. I'm the blue class social, you know, I'm the blue collar, you know, social class guy, you know, and right there in the middle with you talking about, I mean, cause like, yeah, I mean, it's one of two things. He's the Barry Goldwater of our generation, right? That he's changed the voice and the narratives and the things that we focus on in politics. But at the same time, like you said, it's been the same spiel, Bernie, since it's always been the same script, right?
Mm-hmm.
The billionaires, they have the money, the billionaire class, the millionaire, you know, it has changed. The decade changes. The numbers he uses changes, but is he now just an avatar of himself?
I could see that because, again, he's had all that time in the public sector and he really hasn't instituted much change. And it's frustrating.
Now you can't argue he has moved the Democratic Party or made the Democratic Socialist sect of the party more vocal and being more comfortable in doing so and made it mainstream, you know, to where it's not considered as fringe as it was.
But they haven't really taken over the party though. And there's
they're not going to. I don't see them doing that.
One of my favorite Twitter handles, and now they're expanding, but it was Pelosi Stock Watch. And anytime she made a purchase of a stock or she sold stock, they tweeted out what she did. Now they're starting to do that with other senators and congressmen and women. And it's just a brilliant thing, but it's a problem that we saw with Dianne Feinstein. We saw with Nancy Pelosi. We saw with Spencer Bacchus. All these people essentially doing insider trading.
Chuck Grassley.
Tommy Tuberville. Like
90, I mean, what is the third guy in line for the presidency right now? Is like 92.
Yeah.
Huh? You kidding me?
It's ridiculous.
Who's making these choices?
It needs an overhaul. There's a voting minimum age. There needs to be a maximum age of service.
Serving age. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I know the people would fight that, but I think we could probably get enough people after these last three presidencies of Trump, Biden, Trump, that we could definitely put together a constitutional convention.
If you were going to do it, I mean, the time is right. This is the right time to do it. Like, you'd have the most people on board.
100%.
So, well, but you know what? Like, all this is actually, in a weird way, everything that's happening, and This is not normal for me. So, like, I don't know what this is. Maybe it's a intuition that I have, or, you know, it's just a coping mechanism. But I've actually been more hopeful, you know, after this first year of his presidency. And I've actually, you know, people are like, wow, you're optimistic about this. And I'm like, no, not optimistic, hopeful. Like, hopeful in the sense that, like, you look at him and I'm watching him and I'm like, his days are winding down. He's moving slower.
You're wishing death upon him.
But you know what? I would get hate for this probably. I mean, I know the world's going to be a better place when he's not around.
Mm.
And I hate that I feel so comfortable saying that about a human being, but we're also talking about a guy that literally incited a riot on our nation's capital that got people killed. And then because his illegal plan to take over the election results or make them say what he wanted them to say didn't pan out. And then when he wins this time, he pardons all the guys that beat cops on January 6th. I don't see why I should be looked as a moral degenerate for saying the world will be a better place when he's not around.
I understand. I don't wish death on anybody. I'm one of those people. I know I'm a Christian that actually believes and tries to practice what Jesus said. I know it's weird. It's a rare.
Yeah, these are the days I turn off that little evangelical Christian button that I used to have on it. And again, oddly enough, it was a scripture in Psalms that I was reading that said something about like when the day of calamity comes for someone, the Lord laughs and the people rejoice because that evil person's like not around. It was basically saying, like, rejoicing at the fact that the evil and wrong that they brought onto the world was not around it.
No, I get that. So, and Jesus, so, Jesus and the Bible have plenty of examples of people getting their comeuppance who proclaimed they were doing the stuff of the Lord. And then they turned out to be completely false prophets or completely blasphemous. And then they ended up getting righteously smote by the Lord. And the stuff that he said, that Trump said, not Jesus, the stuff that Trump has said and stuff he's claimed about Jesus has frustrated me. The Southern Baptist Convention. I love my Southern Baptist heritage. But when the head of the Southern Baptist Convention says he wouldn't serve communion to an illegal because they're breaking the law, I'm like, son, we are all breaking the law. We are all breaking God's law. All right. We are all sinners. None of us are righteous. Plus, there's a huge sex scandal in the Southern Baptist Convention that you have yet to address. And you're letting people that sexually molested and assaulted teenagers still participate in communion, but you won't give it to an illegal immigrant? I'm like, dude, get your priorities straight. And it was just, it's frustrating to me to see stuff like that. And it, of course, a lot of the atheist and agnostic blogs blew that up. And I'm just like, dude, do you not have any idea of what you're saying? And it's frustrating to me because this time of year, Jesus and Mary and Joseph, they were fleeing, but that wasn't until Jesus was about two or three when Herod was doing the infanticide of everyone 2 years or younger because he thought they were going to overthrow him as the king. That wasn't until Jesus was two. The first time they're there, it's a census that the government is calling that everyone had to return that the Romans did. The second time when they fled back into Egypt, that was legit like an illegal immigrant fleeing for their lives, running from an oppressive regime that was trying to kill them. So I'm just like, I understand Republicans are saying the nativity is not a illegal immigrant metaphor, but I'm also like, you got to keep reading the Bible because Matthew talks about they flee to the land of Canaan because of Herod. So I'm just like, both sides are wrong, but both sides are right at the same time. And it's just frustrating to me.
Yeah. I mean, well, I just, you know, as someone, you know, when I think back to when I was a Christian and even, you know, when I was like the most dedicated in my faith, and I ask myself the question all the time, is like, as a human being, what am I first more? What am I first? Am I a follower of Christ first, or am I an American first? Is my Christian faith and what's required of me by my faith, does that supersede a law that might not be just or right? Or does that supersede, does that supersede what I'm supposed to do?
I think we are all Christians first, and we should all be Christians first, because God's law is greater than our law. And we've had this discussion before about,
that's what I'm saying. That's why when I see like a story about a manger scene and they're talking about like ICE would take away this child, I'm like, that's the most gospel message I think I've seen all holiday season. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's dead on when people are, you know, when some of these churches are using their nativity scenes as ICE protests. To me, like, I don't know, to me that lines up directly with the gospel message, directly with the reason that Jesus
I'm not saying that is incorrect. I'm just saying,
no, and I'm not saying that you were saying that. I'm just saying, like, the people that are just like, that, like, that's blasphemous, that the nativity scene to do it like that. I'm like, no, that's pretty much tailoring the gospel message to the current culture. You know, I mean, and of course that's me, the liberal artistic guy that's going to see the deeper message in that and what someone's trying to do, as opposed to like, oh no, they're vandalizing a nativity scene of something that I'm considered to be very holy and untouchable.
I mean, Jesus was political, whether you want to admit it or not. And Jesus was the harshest criticism he gave were to people claiming to be righteous. Like, if Jesus existed, he would probably burn down Joel Osteen's church, you know?
Right, right, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. So when we see these types of protests, or when you see, like, a protest in a city where, you know, there's a protest against something and something gets destroyed, it's like, yeah, that's wrong. I'm not talking about the people that are looting just to steal or loot, but I'm like, it's that, what's that line that Martin Luther King Jr. always said, that violence is a response to, I don't know, what was it? Violence is the natural voice human response of, to injustice. Or
let me
the
look
voice
it up.
Of the unheard. Or yeah, violence is the voice of the unheard, or the ones that do not receive justice, something like that. All but right. To me, it's just like,
violence is the voice of the unheard. But it is, wait a second. Let me pull it up. I'm going to pull it up. My apologies.
No, you're fine. But that's right. But that's what I'm saying.
It's not enough for me to stand before you tonight and condemn riots. It would be morally irresponsible for me to do that without, at the same time, condemning the contingent, intolerable conditions that exist in our society. These conditions are the things that cause individuals to feel that they have no other alternative than to engage in violent rebellion to get attention. And I must say tonight that a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear the plight of the poor, of the Negro poor, has worsened over the last 12 or 15 years. It has failed to hear that the promise of freedom and justice has not been met. And it has failed to hear that the large segment of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice and humanity. So, I mean,
yeah, that's, so that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like if you translate Jesus to the 20th and 21st century, and we're trying to say, like, what's the socio-political equivalent of what he would be like in this society? He may not be the guy that's going down to loot a store and throw, you know, a Molotov cocktail into a vacant lot, but he might be the guy that's like Martin Luther King Jr. saying, look, I get it, it's wrong, but at the same time, these guys have been mistreated for, like, that. How long do you expect them to exist in society where you don't see them as equals? I feel like he'd be that guy. I feel like he'd be the guy that would be breaking laws. So when someone tells me, like, oh, someone that's undocumented is breaking the law, I'm like, please, whatever. I was like, I didn't stop, you know, fully at the stop sign the other day. You know, I went, it was 2 a.m. in the morning, and I didn't wait for it to turn green, and there was no one there at that stoplight. So, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go right before it turns green. So everyone's broken some sort of law to that manner. So it's just like, I don't understand hiding behind it, and which is definitely why I don't understand when I tell people, like, look, I'm going to be like, oh, it's a better day that Trump's not around. And they'll be like, oh, that's, how could you say something like that? I mean, like, where's the Old Testament conservative in you when I say something like that? I'm literally saying one less pedophile would be around in the world. Usually you'd be happy to back that, but since it's your guy, you know.
The thing that scares me the most right now, yesterday we went to a family function in Huntsville. For us to get there from where we live in Walker County, we have to take Highway 69 to Coleman, and then Coleman jump on 65 to Huntsville. We stopped at a gas station, the Petro in Dodge City. That's right where X69 dumps out onto 65. And across from the gas station was a Trump store. That was what it was called, Trump store. It was all Trump merchandise. It was all Trump everything. We did not go in. I joked with my mother-in-law that I was going to give her a gift certificate there for next Christmas. but he has become a cult of personality that has a legitimate cult now. And it is getting to where it is ridiculous that the level of depravity that people are letting him get away with. His net worth has increased by $4 billion this year alone. Billion with a B. His son's worth has increased by $400 million. Don Jr.
They're not a new business, too. They're not going away.
Yeah.
Even when he goes away, they'll be around.
This is not what you're supposed to do as president. You're not supposed to increase your wealth. And it's sickening. It is disgusting. It is frustrating to me as an American because I work hard. I work 3 jobs. I'm about to launch a 4th one, this new media company. This is our first edition of of conversations that nobody wants to have on Des Moines Sears Media. By the way, Des Moines Sears Media does allow the use of the word fuck. So,
oh my, you could have fucking told me that before we started this. I completely forgot.
But yes, so you can now say that on here.
That's fucking awesome.
All right.
I'm sorry. I'm done.
But if you want to
cut those out,
you can leave it in. I'll leave it in. But I'm just saying, if you need to emphasize a point, like what the fuck, man, I totally understand.
Yeah.
But okay, going back to I'm about to work four jobs. My grocery bill has steadily increased year to year since 2016 when he took over. I know COVID messed up a lot of stuff, but I used to get $200 worth of groceries would last me 2 weeks. Now I'm lucky if that lasts me a week.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, the gas prices have stayed steady around here. We're about 220, 230 pretty consistently, but we're seeing it in other areas. Alabama Power has jacked up the rates so much that they're making record profits, but energy production is cheaper. So you're like, why are you just jacking up your rates for the hell of it? The water bills have gone up for no reason. It's just everything is getting more expensive to get. And I know this is going to make my wife's commie heart proud, but we're getting like ridiculously just ruining everything with the pursuit of money. And
yeah,
corporations are controlling everything right now and just nickel and diming us. Everything we used to get is now a subscription. Like I used to get a disc that gave me all of Windows. I didn't have to pay a monthly or yearly service. Adobe. I used to get a disc that had Adobe Audition and Adobe Premiere. Now I have to pay a monthly subscription fee. It's like they're nickel and diming us, seeing how much they can take until eventually someone's going to snap or enough people will snap and say, fuck you. We're not going to do this anymore. And I don't know if these people, the corporate overlords, think they're immune to it, but if they look at the history of this, when the bourgeoisie takes over, you look at the French Revolution, you look at the Communist Revolution in China, the Communist Revolution in Russia, it does not end well for them.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't end well for the normal people either, because it just, you trade one slave driver for another.
Okay. And this is where I was saying earlier that I feel hopeful, not optimistic. And there's a couple of reasons. One, touching on what you just said. If you look at any futuristic, you know, version of, you know, how the world is, it's all about the end game of global corporatism. You know, WALL-E comes to example, you know, where there's a global corporation.
Honestly, I have that as my number two Pixar film behind Up.
I think it's incredible. I think it's incredible on so many levels, but I definitely feel like sci-fi of the 80s and 90s. Sci-fi is sci-fi, but it's a precursor to what's coming. It's just like, we can't fill in the holes yet, so we're just using our imagination. So now that AI is like upon us, it is here. AI is happening. And I look at like all the 80s and the 90s, and we're looking at all looking to sci-fi now, looking at like, what are the possibilities of going with AI? I think that it's the sci-fi utopia, or the sci-fi futuristic version of this idea of global corporatism. I think it still happens. And I think it's definitely going to happen even faster now with the age of AI. What I think you're going to see, those minor French Revolution type things happening, I think you're going to see them on a more community level. And you're going to see more community return, more breakdown to the community. And so what I'm saying, like, so here in New York, we're seeing, you know, you're always seeing gentrification. It's happening all the time. There's more corporatism up here. There's less of these stores. But there are people that are purposely moving into these neighborhoods and starting up these little shops and purposely only going to this bodega here and this person that's right down here. They're still participating in the global corporatism with app. You know, they have an Apple iPhone. They have an Amazon Prime account. That's still happening. But there's these micro returns to small communal supportive capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
that I think you're going to see. I think you're going to see an emergence of that in the community. And I think that's going to be happening because of the age of AI. And, you know, because I'm reading this book right now, it's called The Singularity is Near. And it's talking about like how quick the exponential rate of return is going to be with AI and when it's fully going to be implemented. And like literally it's going to be in our lives daily, in the next decade. My children will be taught with a teacher and some form of AI that is the content master of whatever it is they're studying. So that's what makes me hopeful in the sense that, yes, corporations and corporatism and oligarchy is going to continue to grow, but there's going to be these micro revolutions and return to community and space that to escape that, escape the AI, escape the digital, you know, the people that are going to choose to remain in reality and form these communities with one another and create and be creative and produce art. I think you're going to see a reemergence of that. I think that's we're about to see that in the next decade or so.
And that is like Brave New World. Remember the savages yes. who are not a part of the modern community taking, I forget what the drug is that everyone wants to take of that basically is a antidepressant that just makes you feel great and ecstatic the whole time. So that is essentially what I've got a cat walking through here.
I saw that.
But that is essentially what they do in Brave New World. And those people have richer, fuller lives. Yeah. They're considered primitive by the people in the big cities, but they are very much, I would say, better off because they do art. They do read Shakespeare. They do everything that is needed to be a culturally and community fulfillment.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's going to be the revolution to this big capital. We're never going to be able to fight global corporatism. It is coming, right? Even if you're someone, let's say that even if I was still an evangelical, that's what you're told. That's the prophecies that all happen. That's what Focus on the Family and, you know, the Left Behind series we're talking about anyway, that there'd be this one global government because it's easier to control everybody. So it's like all these religions and cultures and peoples have these types of, narratives of rebirth that are going to come from all this. But I think what made me most hopeful is when I saw the other day, Trump had, you know, he's putting his name on the Kennedy Center. And I'm sitting there looking at it and I wanted to be upset, but I was just like, this is so sad. This man is trying to put his name on everything in America and make it so permanent because he knows he's about to die, and he thinks that's the only way to matter as a human being is to be remembered a certain way by other people that you do not know intimately or have any real authentic relationship with. And it's just so sad to think about that with him because that name's going to come down. The name's Trump is going to come down off the Kennedy Center. Once he's dead and gone, it's going to be removed.
Hell, the next administration.
They're going to erase everything that he's doing right now is going to be erased. And it just made me realize, like, he's at the end. And he knows it. And it's just, at this point, it's like, it's just pathetic, man. It's just, like, pathetic to watch him.
He's grasping at straws, trying to build out his legacy because he hasn't really built a legacy.
And no one has the balls to say it to him either.
No one wants to tell the emperor he has no clothes.
Like, you're pathetic, man. Just say it to him. Come on. Come on, Donnie Jr. Stand up. Be a man in your life.
If you did, you'd be arrested.
You're pathetic.
You'd be arrested. Right. And that is the problem. And I have a couple of Twitter accounts I automatically get notifications for. I'm still on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. And everyone is talking about, on the conservative side, the stock markets are hitting all-time highs. We're doing so great. If you would have bought stocks back when Trump took office in 2016 and held on to them to now, you'd be up 500%. I was like, that's great and all, but most people don't have disposable incomes to buy stocks. That is a rich person's game. The 401k,
the only reason I was able to play a little bit in that game is because I was fortunate enough to have a job, and my wife and I were both having had jobs during COVID. You know, we were, you know, obviously, you know, teaching was a joke. Remote teaching was a joke. We were just, you know, digital glorified babysitters.
And if you want to read that great book, Glorified Babysitter, it's available on all platforms. Go ahead and order a great copy. It tells you what it's like dealing with COVID students. Very fun, very insightful. Brandon's journey, Glorified Babysitter.
Thank you, David. But I was just thinking, like, you know, we had excuse me, money coming in. It's the one day I was like, you know what? People always talk about the S&P 500. If they're like, you invest in anything, do that. I was like, you know what? I was like, we're fine right now. I was like, the S&P is super low. Everyone always says to buy a lot. I put in $2,000. You know how much it's worth today? $7,000.
Wow.
And that's,
what is that? 400% increase?
It's Yeah.
Or 3.5%, 3.5%, 350% increase.
And when you learn things like that, that like literally if someone had $2,000 of disposable income just for a little bit, how much that would grow the economy and then what they would get in return. I mean, because this is you know, I'm not going to touch this for probably, you know, till my kids are out of high school. And then maybe that's when I'll touch it. And by then, you know, it should be hopefully 60,000, something like that. But again, it's just like, but it took me to like, you know, I got 40, you know, to have even just that little bit of amount to be like, okay, I have this, hopefully I can use this for, or help my kids out, or, you know, use it in the future and have that.
It's amazing to me how often politicians forget. If you want a good economy, especially in a consumer based one, people have to have living wages to buy these goods and services you're providing, you know? When people are having to use credit cards to pay for groceries, that's a problem. And no one wants, very few, there are some politicians, Mamdani's one of them, I will give him credit. I like the idea of basically running a commissary like you get on military bases. I don't see people in government being proactive to help their constituents. I see them more serving their corporate lobbyist masters.
No, and I think this is why you're seeing a time, and again, it's because Trump's in office, it's easier to be this way if you're a president or CEO of a company or corporation. It's okay to be okay watching people have so little, and I feel like those people at the top that control all this are okay with that. Is because we're about to see such a paradigm shift, and they don't know how to control AI just yet. You know what I'm saying? It's like when people talk about getting alternative forms of energy. I'm all for investing that, and I think that's great and all. But I also don't believe that the people that are at the top that hold the power and control everything are going to allow that shift until they figured out how to control the money and that.
Well, it's,
you see what I'm saying?
It's exactly like that, because if all these oil magnates can't, or magnates, not magnets, my forgive me there, pulled up Walker Countyism, magnets, take it for granted. But all these oil magnates are not going to allow people to get rid of their product. All these car companies are not going to allow people to get rid of their product. And when you have these corporate people that only want to profit and put everything first, Adam Conover, I love his podcast Factually, talks about how the medical industry, we're one bacteria strain away from wiping out a ton of the people because we haven't invested money in new antibiotics because they're not profitable, you know?
Yeah.
So most of the antibiotics we have now are not doing anything against the bacterial infections because we don't have any new ones. The bacteria have adapted and evolved where they can combat the antibiotics we have now. We're seeing bacteria resistant or antibiotic resistant gonorrhea. We're seeing antibiotic resistant.
Tell me about it, man. It's the worst.
I knew you did it. You know, if you wouldn't be a gigolo on your side.
I tell you, man.
But
if I could make a living as a teacher. No.
But we're seeing more MRSA cases because people are the MRSA has evolved to not react to the antibiotics away. So we're seeing all these things because corporations have not decided to invest in them because they're not profitable right now. Now, I guarantee you, if this starts spreading, it'll be like the COVID vaccine. We'll have Operation Warp Speed all over again, and we'll get better antibiotics. But I say that, and then I realize, oh yeah, we just cut all the funding to the Department of Health. So we're fucked if something like that happens.
No, that's true. But like I said, I'm hopeful because I think we're on the verge of that pendulum swing. I really do. And I think it says something to the universe that a man like me has hope.
That scares me.
Yeah, that's like,
you have hope.
I'm not sure where the hope is directed, but I've actually, like, in all my years of Trump, I've never been more hopeful.
To me, I've just never liked AI because I was raised on Terminator, Ultron, the Age of Ultron.
Read this book that I told you about.
Oh, I bought it. I bought it.
Oh, you did?
And okay, I bought the sequel. I bought both of them. Right now, I'm working on myself. I know this is hard to believe, but I'm trying to improve my health, and I've started Atomic Habits. But I've got so many books that are on the shelf that I'm getting ready to read. But I've never been a fan of AI. Age of Ultron, the movie, Ultron is alive, gets on the internet, scans it for a minute, decides I have to end humanity. You know, I really think that's what's going to happen with AI if it becomes, unleashed.
I hear that. No, I've had that. Like I had like this unhealthy fear of it, like of this past year, like it's just been an obsession. And then I started reading The Singularity Is Near. And the way the guy talks about, yes, it's going to be fundamentally changed, but the way that AI is, you're always going to have these setbacks, but you're always going to have this shift closer to the singularity, the idea of how much is available for everyone to access, and it will be greater than any point in human history, the access that each individual person has. And to me, that's kind of exciting. Yes, that's scary, but think as crazy as things are now, the access that so much more people have to information, and yes, of course, misinformation, but have this ability to know more what's going on. So it makes it harder for the people at the top to hide, you know, from the public. I don't know. That's the way that I look at it. I mean, because the internet did that, you know, social media for all its drawbacks and horrible, horrible things it's done has had good. You know, so.
And you're right with that view that will make me a little more optimistic when you're starting to see more of a singularity, people being exposed to the truth. And yes, you said there is misinformation out there, but there are more tools now to call out people and say, hey, what you think is bullshit, here's why. And I know not everyone reacts well to having their worldview destroyed, but it's amazing to me what we've got coming and what we can possibly do with this new information. Hopefully we will get better with it. But I'm just, the amount of energy it's taking to use all the AI tools and the
that's what's insane. Yeah.
The stuff that with ChatGPT causing people to have psychotic breaks and kill themselves. I mean, that is what concerns me right now.
Yeah. It's just, it is concerning to live through it in real time. And the thing I think that helps me process it, I guess this could be a coping mechanism, is I think about every paradigm shift in human history or every time where humanity was enlightened with some new machinery, some new way of doing something, some new knowledge. And when that has happened, it feels like that naturally always births good and bad. It's like, yeah, the internet, boom, the internet. Oh my God, we have access to knowledge at our fingertips. Yeah, you also got a lot of porn now, too. Like, you know, you got a pathway to college through the computer so that if you're not able to get out of your house, you can now obtain that knowledge. But you got a lot of porn on the internet now, too. And a lot of weird stuff. And now you got the dark internet. And it's just like, I don't know. And maybe this is just the older I get, one of those things. But the older I get, there you go. I'm like, yeah, I've lived through one of these before. Okay, let's do this again. You know, let's see what happens. I don't know. And I guess in a weird way, I'm looking more the hopeful side of this, you know, and maybe the way, who knows, maybe it might lighten the load of the teacher in the sense that they're not having to lesson plan anymore or create the lessons. Instead of having to worry about all that, society has said, okay, we need more social and emotional support. Because look, like I said, in the short time that I've been teaching, which is almost 15 years now, we have become the replacement of parents so much more than when I first started teaching, where we are now, especially post-COVID. It's like this expectation that, yeah, you know, I can't handle parenting my kid. You're supposed to help me. And that natural biological inclination is there and is natural because it does take a village. It does take a small tribe to raise a child. But that's what human evolution has put us at right now. Society is saying, hey, we're having to work all the time. So now teachers have this expectation that, yeah, you're a substitute parent, whether you want to be or not. So I don't know. I guess, yeah, I'm going to choose hope in this one. I'm going to leave it on that.
I think that's a good way to end it, even though I'm scared that Brendan Triola has some optimistic hope.
Woo.
Woo.
It's dangerous, man.
One hell of a year, it's 2025.
Dangerous. It's dangerous what kids will do to you, man. It is. Really having kids. Kids will put hope in you like you believe you did not have.
All right. Well, Brandon, if they want to find you on social media, where can they find you? And also, tell us more about that great book you just wrote.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to find me, you can find me on TikTok at Brandon Triola. You can find me on Instagram, the hashtag Brandon C. Triola. And my new book, Glorified Babysitter, The Ex-Evangelical Journey of a Public School Teacher, is out. It is available on all reading platforms, both digital and book. If you want to get the most money to me, you want to go to Ingram Spark Publishing. Just Google Ingram Spark Publishing. It'll pop up right on your search bar. You click on it, you buy the book through them, and I get a little extra money.
Well, there you go.
This book, if you don't want to give it to Jeff Bezos.
I am at DavidSears75 on X, at DavidSears1982 on Instagram. I'm on TikTok, but I only have it for videos that my wife and my friends and my cousins send me. So I'm not really active on there, but I am pretty active on X and Instagram. I'm going to lighten your day with some stupid meme content on Instagram. I put up stupid memes. So, Brandon, it has been a pleasure. I can't wait to hopefully get this going on a regular basis. And
yes, absolutely.
Thank you for joining us on the first episode of Conversations That Nobody Wants to Have, where we can say fuck on Des Moines Sears Media.
Have a good fucking day, dude.
Have a good fucking day, Brandon.
See ya.
The proceeding has been a production of Des Moines Sears Media.